Hey everyone, it's me, Amy Walter. This podcast is brought to you by the Cook Political Report. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a chance you're a politics nerd, which of course we love. And now we have the perfect podcast for you, our new Editor's Roundtable. My team and I go behind the scenes and let you know what we're thinking and talking about. We discuss national elections, down ballot races, polling, a whole lot more. It's only $1.99 a month to get inside access to our best-in-class analysis. So go find Editor's Roundtable in Apple Podcasts and subscribe today. Hello, I'm Amy Walter. Welcome to The Odd Years. We continue our tour of the swing states with a stop in Wisconsin. As you know, presidential elections there, the last two cycles have been incredibly close. In 2016 and 2020, they were decided by less than one percentage point. Of course, polling in the state has been notoriously, shall we say, off or maybe fickle, which makes it more important than ever to talk to people who have been covering politics in Wisconsin for quite some time and can help us understand the many whims and changes there, which is why I invited Craig Gilbert to talk with me today. He is a self-described chronicler of close Wisconsin elections, and he calls it one of the most enduring of the battleground states. He has covered politics in Wisconsin since 1988. He was the Washington bureau chief and national political reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is now a fellow at Marquette University's Lubar Center. And here is our conversation. Craig Gilbert, thank you so much for joining me. Really excited to have you here.
It's great to be with you, Amy.
Okay, we were just discussing this off camera, but you have covered races in the state of Wisconsin since 1988, covering the Senate race, you said, in 1988. So again, we can't do math very well, but it's close to 40 years of covering elections in Wisconsin. And throughout those years, Craig, things have been really, really close, especially at the presidential election. What gives?
I spent a lot of time thinking about this because it is kind of strange. I mean, it's kind of strange that Wisconsin has been so competitive for so long when so many other states have like fallen in and out of competitiveness or never been competitive. And the strangest thing is a whole lot has actually changed in that time. I mean, the political map in Wisconsin has changed a lot. The demographics of politics and voting patterns have changed a lot in Wisconsin, just like everywhere else. So magically, we're still a battleground state, even though both parties have a different path to victory than they did 20 or 30 years ago. And even though the political math of the state has changed pretty dramatically from 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, let's even think about what it changed from, say, Barack Obama 2008 and 2012. That feels like, first of all, that was about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But I think some of us, especially those of us who started covering politics at that time, looked at the margins in both of those races where Obama won easily in that state and thought, to your point, oh, I guess it's not a battleground anymore. And of course, we found out in 2016 it was. So what made the Obama era an outlier, or what has changed since 2012 that makes it still a nail biter of a state?
Yeah, I think it really was. I mean, it clearly was an outlier because it was preceded by the two Bush elections of 2000 and 2004, which were just as close, or they're actually closer than the two Trump elections. And, you know, even before that, the Clinton years, it wasn't, you know, razor thin, but the popular vote in Wisconsin kind of reflected the national vote pretty well. So, you know, Obama, it's a little bit of an enigma. I mean, he was just, you know, he was popular, obviously, everywhere in 08, but he was extra popular in Wisconsin. I mean, I've heard different theories offered about that, but I mean, he basically won everywhere in Wisconsin.
Right.
And even 4 years later, when, you know, he wasn't going to replicate that. And you had a Wisconsinite on the Republican ticket in the name of
Paul Ryan. Yeah.
He still won Wisconsin by 7 points. And he still won a lot of smaller rural counties that, you know, later became known as Obama-Trump counties.
Right.
He overperformed in Wisconsin for one reason or another. But, you know, I've learned many times over those 30 or 40 years, I've heard people say, well, it looks like Wisconsin is now, you know, going to become kind of a blue state or even kind of a red state because of its demographics. People have made that prediction. And so I'm very wary of those. I've become very wary of those predictions because it never seems to pan out. And, you know, the other, it's just real cross currents in Wisconsin. So, you know, even looking ahead to this election, people want on both sides would like to see a little daylight between their candidate and the other candidate. And it's hard to find that daylight. And one reason is you've got, you know, clearly different parts of the state moving in different directions. And when that's happening, it's hard to open up any distance between the parties.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because Wisconsin is the whitest of all the battleground states. It's almost 60% of the electorate is white non-college voters. And so you would look at just those two statistics alone and say, this should be a red state. How have Democrats been able to keep their strength with these voters where they've failed to do so in some of these other states that look a lot more like Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's funny because they have lost ground with those voters. They were like even more competitive, of course, in the Clinton years and in the Obama years and even in the Gore-Kerry years. They were more competitive with those voters than they are now. But they're still doing better in Wisconsin with those demographics than they are in most other places. In fact, I'm writing about this very thing right now. This colleague of mine did a really interesting he created a demographic model, you know, using the kind of demographic variables you'd expect to see, you know, to sort of predict the vote county by county and then look at how the actual vote deviated from the what you would think from the demographics. And Wisconsin, almost everywhere in Wisconsin is bluer than you'd expect it to be demographically. Even the counties that are 20 or 30 points Republican, you'd expect them to be 40 points Republican. So, you know, demographics are making themselves felt. I mean, they're clearly a better predictor now than they were 20 years ago. The really quirky parts of Wisconsin are getting a little less quirky in that regard, but it still has, you know, its own political culture. And if Donald Trump is winning white non-college voters by 20 or 25 points or 30 points in other states, he's winning them by 8 or 10 points in Wisconsin.
And Craig, you've done so much great work on covering Wisconsin and this transformation of the state demographically, geographically. My very distilled version of it is that each one of these demographic or geographic areas, maybe more geographic, is there has been enough shift to one party there that's been offset by the other party by an equal amount. So if you can talk about the Milwaukee suburbs and say Madison, Dane County versus the more rural parts of the state and how they almost the shift D and R are almost exact, which gives us purple Wisconsin time after time.
Yeah. So if you were to compare the jump ball election of 2000 or 2004 to the race within elections of 16 and 20, you can quantify all of that. And what you'd see is that most of the Democratic gains in their vote margin are in the Milwaukee and Madison suburbs. And most of the Republican gains in their vote margin are in small towns and rural counties. There are parts of the state that haven't, you know, like Green Bay proper and Brown County, that core Fox Valley area doesn't really bounce around a lot. The suburbs of, you know, the exurbs of the Twin Cities in western Wisconsin, they're fairly purple. They're not moving radically in one direction. But on the Democratic side, you've got obviously Madison is super blue and the city of Milwaukee is super blue. But you've got these inner suburbs in Milwaukee that went from being purple to super blue. You've got the outer suburbs of Milwaukee that were famously Republican, the WOW counties that have gotten less Republican, some of them a lot less Republican. You've got these suburbs of Madison that don't get as much attention, that have grown like crazy. And some of them used to be quite purple. And now some of them are as blue as the city of Madison.
Right.
So there's a huge, you know, Dane County impact because of population growth on top of the political trend. And then, of course, you got these rural swings, which started actually in Wisconsin in the Scott Walker years when he was running for governor. But at the presidential level, you saw it in 16. And that was the big shift. And you get to 20, and these shifts are not as big, but they're still the same direction on both sides. So that the question becomes, looking ahead to 2024 with respect to the map, is are Democrats losing more ground over here compared to Republicans over there? And how does that net out?
And that gets us where we are today, which is I just went on and looked at the 538 polling average, mm-hmm. where Harris is now ahead in the average by 6/10 of a point, which is where one would assume it would be, given everything we've discussed, a race that's within 6/10 of a point. What is interesting, though, and I'm curious to get your take, is there's the sense that these so-called blue wall states, of which Wisconsin is one, have tightened over the last few weeks. And when you do look, again, just at the polling average, Harris was leading by about 2 points earlier in September. And now, as I said, it's 6/10 of a point. What are you seeing and feeling and hearing in the state? Is that your sense, too, that maybe Harris had a bigger lead earlier this fall, but it's now tightened? And is this just natural tightening for all the reasons we discussed, or is something else going on?
I mean, the funny thing about your comment about the 6/10 of a percent lead in the 538 polling average is that was exactly the margin that Joe Biden had in 2020. So, you know, part of me thinks nothing's really happening and nothing's really changing, and we're back where we started. You know, we've had polling at Marquette, my colleague, Charles Franklin, who does the Marquette poll, at, you know, that's had it, at times it's had it a jump ball. In the last couple of polls, you know, Harris had a little bit of a lead.
Yep.
But I have always thought that the best, you know, guidepost is the last election. In fact, the last two elections, because they were so close. And the same guy who was on the ballot on the Republican side in those two elections is on the ballot this time. And he's a pretty polarizing figure. So, I mean, that's certainly my baseline. So I wouldn't expect, you know, I wouldn't expect more than a 2-point race, probably a 1-point race. I also would not be at all surprised if we feel just as uncertain on election night about the outcome as we do now. I don't know how much it is movement of the last week or two. I mean, obviously there was a kind of a Kamala Harris surge. And the biggest thing you saw, of course, everywhere and dramatically in our polling was this surge in Democratic enthusiasm, which was, you don't see anything that vividly in the numbers normally, but that was so, so unmistakable. And there's probably a sense in which that kind of taps out a little bit.
Well, then it leads me to the question of, if we do have this incredibly polarized electorate, are there even any swing voters in this state? Or is the question just, if I'm a Dem, I got to get my people out. If I'm a Republican, right, I got to get my people out. And there's really nobody sitting out there going, I wonder which party I should vote for. I'm really focused on this issue and this person is better for me, at least at the presidential level. Curious your take on that.
Well, I've seen some focus group conversations where you do see the classic, and again, I don't think there's a ton of these people, but you do see the classic situation where some people are wrestling with their real either unhappiness or disgust on a personal level with Donald Trump, and the fact that, you know, they might think things will be better, at least with the economy. Or they might have a problem with Kamala Harris, or they might just be a little bit reluctant to vote for a Democrat. Because in our polling, you know, she had consolidated Democrats to the extent that the dwindling number of undecideds out there were kind of like all mostly moderate Republicans and independents. And then these were the classic conflicted voters who otherwise probably would pull the ballot for Donald Trump, may have voted for him once, but not twice, and were kind of disgusted. But so that's the, like, the feels like the battleground. Obviously, the other key is who's going to vote. And so there's certainly people where the suspense is over whether they turn out or not. And that's where, you know, the ground game will come into play. And you hear interesting things about the ground game this time around, which we can talk about. But to the extent there are any undecided voters, I think it's that thing where they are whipsawed between their qualms about Donald Trump and their unhappiness on some level with circumstances today.
Which is exactly what the Marquette poll suggests, because, again, this is the most recent poll. This was basically mid to late September, mm-hmm. when this was in the field. So Harris up 52-48, even as, when you ask the question, who do you think would do a better job on the economy? Trump up 9. Yeah. Who do you think has a stronger record of accomplishment? Trump 54. Harris only, I think, at 41, something like that. So clearly, if this were based just on who would do a better job on the issues you care about, Trump would be ahead. So why isn't he? Well, because of what you just pointed out. They say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She wins. She's scoring better on all the personal attributes, yep. you know, honesty, temperament, integrity, corruption, behavior, whatever they are. And then, you know, there are some issues that are more favorable to Democrats too. But yeah, so that's the push-pull of all this.
So let's talk about the ground game. I know after 2016, a lot of Democrats hand-wringing about the lack of enthusiasm and turnout in the city of Milwaukee, especially among voters of color. In 2020, they said, we're going to fix that. And I guess the question is, one, was that the difference between Democrats' success in 2020 from 2016? And then the follow-up question would be, is there still a Milwaukee challenge for Democrats, but it may look a little bit different this time? And I'm thinking specifically among Latino voters and younger voters who may not be Trump voters, and they hadn't been Trump voters in the past, but they may be curious about him now.
No, those are all good questions. To answer your first question, the flip from Trump to Biden statewide in 2020 had nothing to do with the city of Milwaukee. I mean, the city of Milwaukee, basically Biden kind of replicated Hillary Clinton's performance, and both of them fell far short of Barack Obama's performance in the city of Milwaukee, which is not shocking. And also, you know, you've got some population trends. There's been some population loss in the city of Milwaukee. There's turnout issues. Biden and Clinton basically won the same share of the city vote as Obama, but the raw vote margins were down because the total votes cast was down. But those are all good questions going forward about the challenges for Democrats. There's always this turnout challenge. There is now this sort of these added questions about younger voters and voters of color and younger voters of color and male voters of color and younger male voters. And that's all, you know, you see some of that in the polling. Our polling isn't a great window into the voters of color just because it's such a small part of the Wisconsin electorate.
Right.
We talked about how white Wisconsin is, and it is the whitest battleground. So the flip was much more about the suburbs. And so when you see Milwaukee County performing better for Democrats over time, it's because of the suburbs and not so much because of the city. But yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, it's not the game. I mean, it's one of many things that are going to affect this race on the margins, because I think sometimes people think that the raw numbers are bigger than they are in terms of the city vote. The metropolitan area of Milwaukee is trending Democratic because of what's happened in the suburbs too. I mean, it was actually a little bit more Republican than the state as a whole in the Bush years, and now it's more Democratic.
A quick break, and we'll be back with Craig Gilbert. If you love these conversations, consider becoming a subscriber to the Cook Political Report. It gives you access to our analysis, elections ratings, and all the crucial information you need as we head into Election Day. We'll also hold a post-election briefing that's available only to subscribers. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe to learn more. And we're back. when we talk about the ground game, and I know you spend a lot of time in and around the state, what are you looking for? How are you getting a sense for where the campaigns are doing well or maybe where they're falling short?
I mean, it's always hard to evaluate from the outside, but there are some interesting things going on this time around. It should be kind of favorable to Democrats, but there's always these X factors and questions around, you know, Donald Trump's ability to mobilize sporadic voters on his side. And he's done that in the past. I think you do hear questions about the Republican ground game. At the state party level, the Democrats are raising a lot more money and they appear to be doing more. The Republicans have kind of outsourced a lot of mobilization to other groups. And so I've heard Republicans raise questions about whether their ground game is going to be as good as the Democratic ground game. Another thing to kind of keep your eye on and think about in Wisconsin, of course, is because we have new legislative maps that are much more competitive than they've been in almost a decade and a half. You've got a lot more activity around Democratic legislative candidates in other parts of the state outside the Democratic base areas. And so there's a lot of activity around that for state legislature. So the picture is a little bit brighter, I think, for Democrats when it comes to that. But again, this just sort of, can Donald Trump kind of drag these voters to the polls, whether or not he's got a great ground game? Are there people that are that didn't turn out in the midterms
exactly.
and haven't turned out in the midterms? And again, Republicans have struggled in the Trump era in these statewide elections in Wisconsin. They've rarely hit 50% in a big statewide race, and they've had a low ceiling. And so that's where the Trump factor may or may not come into play.
And then there's always the reality of Wisconsin, you can register to vote at the polls, essentially.
Yep. On election day. We have
election day
registration. Yeah.
So that also adds a certain element of uncertainty. But the one place where you would think you would see that show up is on a college campus, shall we say, University of Wisconsin, which has thousands of students there. One thing I remember reading in 2016 was reports of people being on the Wisconsin campus and feeling like, gosh, if I didn't know better, I would have no idea that there was an election going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2020, of course, we had COVID. And so you didn't have that same sort of college atmosphere. Do we think that the college vote, that young vote, whether it's in Madison or at the other, you know, in La Crosse, the other UW locations, is going to be as robust as Democrats hope it would be?
I think it's an open question. I mean, some of these Trump era elections, it has been robust. Again, you know, we're seeing a big gender gap in our polling among younger voters. So that figures into this.
Yeah. This is among your 18 to 29 year old type voters.
Yes. I think it's under 30. It might be under 40, but it's the biggest gender gaps by age in our polling, in the polling that Charles Franklin has done, I believe and this stuff bounces around, but it was the youngest cohort. And it was kind of like the people in their 50s, and it was the 60 and over that had a very small gender gap. But the gender gap among younger voters kind of fits into what we think is some other things we think is going on anecdotally, and we see in other polling. I don't know what that's going to mean for the campus vote. I mean, Democrats have been prospering, generally speaking, in university cities. I mean, and obviously Madison is the greatest example, but if you look in western Wisconsin at places like La Crosse and Eau Claire, those are blue hubs on the map in that part of the state. They do look to those places to generate a big vote, both from students, from people that work for universities, and from people that settle there because they're university communities as well.
And it attracts, again, a certain type of person that now Democrats do better with, and that would be somebody with a college degree, somebody working in the so-called knowledge economy. Okay, let's talk about, I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about your Senate race there. Mm-hmm. Again, quirky Wisconsin, you have one of the most conservative senators and you have one of the most liberal senators. This could be, once again, one of the only states in the country at the end of this election that has a split delegation.
Right.
Most states now have all Dems or all Republicans. Again, what gives there? How does the state elect the most, one of the most liberal and one of the most conservative members?
I went down this rabbit hole a while ago because there's this political science methodology for quantifying how liberal or conservative every member of Congress is, and you can kind of
Okay.
roll it back in time. And according to their data, I think I figured out that Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin were not only the biggest odd couple of same state senators today, but like in the post-war era, practically. So it is, and that's obviously a function of being a 50-50 state where it doesn't take much to flip. And so, Ron Johnson won his last race by about a point. When I was talking about that, the high water mark for Republicans in the Trump era has been like 50.5, and that was Ron Johnson's last Senate race. But that was a really narrow race. And Tammy Baldwin's had some much bigger victories. So she's got a really good election track record. She's done the kinds of things you would think a smart politician does. She's, a liberal Democrat from Madison, and but she has run on issues you wouldn't necessarily associate with a liberal Democrat from Madison. I mean, she's run on dairy, she's run on American manufacturing, she's run on trade issues. She has performed better and more competitively than other Democrats in rural counties and small towns.
Yeah, and you don't see her on the sort of tip of the spear
Right.
when it comes to these issues, more liberal issues like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, right? I don't think people outside of Wisconsin necessarily know that much about Tammy Baldwin in the way they know about other high-profile liberal senators. But the interesting thing that's been happening, at least that we've seen in the last couple of months, is that Baldwin had something of a pretty solid lead over her Republican opponent, Eric Hovde. That has tightened back up. And again, this feels like we ask the same question, Craig, every time, probably getting the same answer, which is it tightening because this is just the way it's always going to be? Or is something else going on underneath that? Because to your point, yes, Baldwin has put up bigger margins, but the last time she was on the ballot with a presidential candidate, it was Barack Obama in 2012 when he was winning with by 8 points.
That's true. And so when she was had her big double digit victory in 2018, it was a midterm with a Republican president, and she was running against a very underfunded Republican challenger. So that's all different. So you'd expect a closer race. I think it is a race. I don't think it's a 50-50 race, partly because I would expect her, and I think most people in the Wisconsin political world would think that she's going to perform better than Kamala Harris, that her margin will be better, whether either one of them wins or loses. So you would conclude from that for Eric Hovde to win, Donald Trump has to win, and maybe has to win by at least a point or two. That's just my math. It may not be the right math, but that's kind of the way I look at it. The money is much more competitive than it has been in the past, and so she's getting a lot of incoming. And she's also been, there's been a lot of incoming on her opponent too. He's been kind of battered. I mean, in our polling again, as of a couple of weeks ago, he was underwater. He's been underwater the whole time he's been growing in name ID. And she's always been kind of around 50-50. That's kind of where she is. And her personal numbers don't bounce around a lot. They've never been too high or too low over the years. She doesn't seem to be a really polarizing figure. So that I think that's where things are at. I think it's still advantage Baldwin, but assuming the race is tightening, I think you would expect it to tighten. And then the other question is whether the money and the messaging directed at her here at the end, whether that's taking a toll or not.
The vote counting has been in the news since 2020, and partisan Republicans in the state, and of course, former President Trump criticizing the vote counting process. And Wisconsin, if you can explain Wisconsin, it does not have a traditional Secretary of State. It has a board of elections, right? Talk about any changes that have happened since 2020 that could have an impact either on how votes are cast or how they're counted.
Wisconsin, we've, you know, the voting wars date back many, many years in Wisconsin, and they were fueled, you know, by those close elections in 2000 and 2004, where, I mean, if you're, you know, Republicans lost one of those presidential elections by about 5,000 votes. But when Scott Walker got elected Republican governor, he made a lot of changes to the election system that Republicans wanted. I mean, that's kind of the irony of all the uproar in the Trump years and all the and many of the unfounded claims that have been made about the election system is this was an election system really kind of made by Republicans, certainly fine-tuned by Republicans. And so one of the things that gets a lot of attention in Wisconsin are the, you know, the famous late absentee ballot drop in Milwaukee. So here's the thing, you can vote, you know, absentee by mail, you can vote early in person. Different cities have different methods for counting those mailed absentee ballots. And of course, there were a lot of them in 2020 because of the pandemic. Milwaukee and about 30 something other municipalities has something they call central count. So all the absentee ballots are counted separately, and they're counted after the other votes are tabulated. In some other cities like Madison, they get sort of, they stay in the local polling places and they get counted over the course of the day and tabulated with the other vote, with the regular, say, election day votes. So the issue is, when can the city, like Milwaukee, start processing these ballots, not even counting them, but canvassing them? So making sure the signatures are all in place, doing that administrative stuff that can be time consuming on election night after the polls close. And that's what resulted in like the 1 o'clock in the morning. And if you're right, talking about the city of Milwaukee and you're talking about 170,000 votes, guess how those
which
votes
way
are
they
gonna,
went,
which way exactly they're going to go. And they're going to go not only, I mean, the city of Milwaukee was 4-1, but the people that are voting absentee by mail are more than 4-1.
Yeah.
So that's 100,000 net votes or more that, you know, suddenly Joe Biden is getting when those votes are reported in the wee hours. So the solution, you know, one solution would be if the cities counted the votes differently, but the other solution would be the legislature say you can start processing the ballots before the polls close. And the assembly, the Republican assembly, passed a bill to that effect, and the Republican Senate let it die. So we're back where we were in the city of Milwaukee. I think they've, you know, they've got more experience and they've had more time to try to kind of fine tune and tweak the process. And also there's going to be fewer of them, I think, because we're not in a pandemic. So maybe it won't be as late this time. And then maybe there won't be as many this time.
Right. But thank you for walking through that. I think that that is extremely helpful. And a reminder too, that, you know, we are not in a pandemic moment like we were in 2020. So many of the fights in 2020 were over the so-called late ballot dumps, whether it was in Pennsylvania or in Michigan or in Wisconsin. And theoretically, you're not, because it's not a pandemic and more people want to vote in person or early, you're not going to have that same dump. But there is the possibility that in states this close, that those late counted ballots are the difference between Harris winning and Harris losing. So we, once again, have this fight.
Yeah, but the crazy thing, again, is that if Democrats are winning, they're not winning because of the city of Milwaukee, because they're actually not performing as well in the city of Milwaukee as they used to for the reasons we've talked about. That's not where the votes.
That's a good point.
That's not where the Democratic gains are being made. So it's in that sense, it was kind of absurd for people who didn't like the outcome to think there was mischief in the city of Milwaukee. And that was the reason Donald Trump lost.
Right. And it's an easier target than to say, hey, those former Republican strongholds are no longer as Republican because they've turned away from Donald Trump. Right.
Exactly.
So if Republicans lose, it's because they've lost the suburbs that they used to own, not because of the Democrats coming and turning out in Milwaukee, as they always do. Finally, Craig, give us, for our election night viewing party, the couple of counties that you are watching that could tell us something about the outcome. And, you know, everyone talks about Waukesha, but I know there are a couple other counties that you all have identified as being as interesting, if not more predictive for the final outcome.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's hard to find predictive counties these days. Like, I've kind of soured on bellwethers because, you know, sometimes you get a county that one of the, like, there were two counties, I think, that flipped from Trump to Biden in Wisconsin. One of them is Door County. I mean, Door County is a resort county on Lake Michigan, famous for having a lot of Illinois transplants.
That was me when I growing up in Chicago. That's where we went on vacation,
right,
up in Sister Bay, Door County.
Right. So it's a bellwether, in a, technically speaking, but it's not a very representative county.
Exactly.
So you've got counties, again, that are representative of these big cross currents we've been talking about. You've got the wow counties that are particularly Waukesha, that's representative of, you know, a thing that's happening in the suburbs. You've got the counties up north and some counties in the west, some smaller counties that are representative of what's happening in the small towns. And then you've got a county like, you know, it's always fun to look at Green Bay, which is Brown County, because it doesn't, weirdly, amid all this flux, it doesn't really change that much. It's kind of a blue-collar city. The blue-collar cities are interesting in Wisconsin because, I mean, that is one place, the smaller blue-collar cities, that's one place where Republicans have hopes of making some inroads because you've got a lot of union and former union and blue-collar people where they think Trump can improve. We haven't seen, other than Kenosha, which was where the unrest occurred, we haven't, and where there was a shift in the vote toward the Republicans, we haven't seen it in so much in these other cities, but they will be interesting to watch. The Green Bays, the Janesvilles, and cities, you know, other kind of smaller cities around Wisconsin. And then, not a bellwether, but again, you know, we talked about Madison. I mean, the reason to watch Dane County is because the question is, how much bigger is the raw vote going to get for Democrats? And just to give you a little perspective, Democrats were winning Dane County by 50,000 votes in the Clinton years, 90,000 votes in the 2000s, 130,000 votes in the Obama years, and 180,000 votes in 2020. So every 4 years, it's potentially adding 20 or 30,000 votes to the net Democratic total in a state that was only carried by 20,000 votes. And so to the extent that that happens again, I mean, maybe that there's a diminishing growth there, but to the extent that happens again, then Republicans have to find those votes to make up for it somewhere else. So
yeah,
that's the Dane County factor.
Well, Craig, this has been a fantastic lesson and insights, as usual, from, I think you will win the award as the person who knows more about Wisconsin, its politics, its demographics, and the shifting voting patterns than anyone else. I'm excited to read your forthcoming piece. This is in the Journal Sentinel that you'll be writing it, right? Or are you writing it for Marquette?
No, these appear in the Journal Sentinel. This one will appear closer to Election Day, but there will be other stories. Lots of fun to talk, things to talk about the map and about everything else.
Well, that is, as you know, in our wheelhouse. We love this stuff. Our listeners love this stuff. So thanks again, and safe travels throughout the great state of Wisconsin and all of its many wonderful options for food.
Amen. It's a real pleasure anytime.
Thank you so much for listening to The Odd Years. If you liked what you heard or want to make a suggestion, leave us a review. Or recommend us to a friend. You're our best way to get the word out about what we do. And if you want more from the Cook Political Report, consider becoming a subscriber. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. While you're there, you can use the discount code OD10 to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is available only to new subscribers. The Odd Years is brought to you by the Cook Political Report and is produced by Becca Kaufman. Thanks, and talk to you soon.